There are almost no pictures of Auschwitz, the most notorious of the Nazi death camps. The few that did surface show some of the activities for which the name will be forever odious, the arrival of a group of Hungarian Jews in the spring of 1944. But now another set of photographs has emerged, pictures that are very, very different. Over 100 snapshots of the officers and the staff at Auschwitz in sing-alongs, Christmas celebrations, sunning at nearby recreation lodges. They include pictures of the so-called Angel of Death, Joseph Mengele. The album is now being studied at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum here in Washington, D.C., though you can see some of the images online if you go to npr.org/talk. If you have questions about the life of Auschwitz staff members, give us a call, or about the meanings of these pictures. The number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. These photos came to Rebecca Erbelding, an archivist at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, and she's been kind enough to join us today here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Of course.
And you've been brought in this album of these pictures, and I'm looking at a group of, one man and a large number of young women sitting on a fence eating...
Blueberries.
Blueberries.
They're eating blueberries.
And one of the women has this sort of, mock expression of sadness as she holds her bowl upside down.
Yes. The male in the photograph is our album owner. His name was Carl Hooker, and he was the adjutant to the camp commandant between May of 1944 and January of 1945. The girls surrounding him are SS Helfereinen, who were telecommunication specialists, teenagers and young girls in their young 20s, who worked in the camp doing teletypes and telephones. He had taken them on a day trip in July of 1944, July 22nd to be exact, and that photograph comes from a page entitled Here There Are Blueberries, and it's six photographs, shows him passing out the blueberries, the girls enjoying the blueberries, and then that photograph in which they all turn their bowls upside down to show how sad they are that there are no more blueberries. The frightening thing about this picture is that it was taken on the same day that a transport of 150 Jews came into the camp, and of them, only 33 survived the first day.
Which is the contrast of those two things is what makes these pictures amazing. By themselves, if this were any other group of people in the world, these are dull, ordinary, workaday, mundane pictures.
Right. It would look like a vacation album. But that, in contrast with what we know about Auschwitz, what we know that was going on, and what we have in other the other photographic album, the Auschwitz album, it boggles the mind how they were able to place themselves in such a dual role, that this is what they did during the day, and then they would go home and be with their pets, with their families. It's one of the things that intrigues us so much about the album, is that everyone always thinks of Nazis as these red-eyed, villainous creatures, whereas in this photo, in this album, you can see that they were human beings. And that's one of the things that's so frightening, is that we forget that they were also human beings, people with families, and this was their job, and they did it exceptionally well. And it really makes you think about your own psyche and whether we have the propensity to have this happen again.
They're, I'm sure, not the first person to remind you of the phrase, Hannah Arendt's famous phrase, mm-hmm. The banality of evil.
Exactly.
There are pictures of a Christmas celebration, the last Christmas, I guess, mm-hmm. at Auschwitz.
December 1944. The photographs are entitled Yule Fire, and they show Carl Hooker lighting candles on a Christmas tree. These photographs were taken about 3 weeks before the SS evacuated the camp in fear of being captured by the Red Army, which liberated the camp on January 27th.
And it shows a man lighting candles, which is, of course, before a lot of electrical power. That's how people lighted Christmas trees.
Yes. And even to the end, they were delusional in their beliefs that it wasn't going to end, they wouldn't have to evacuate, and they took the time to celebrate the Christmas holidays.
How did these pictures come to you from the assistant commandant?
Well, it's very funny. We got them from an anonymous donor who found them in an abandoned apartment in Frankfurt very soon after the war in 1946. He contacted the museum in December and said that he had photographs of wartime Auschwitz. I asked for more information, and he sent the album to me through the U.S. mail, which, in retrospect, I don't understand how that happened. But I received the pictures and started flipping through them and very quickly realized how special these photos are. The first person we identified was Josef Mengele. And from there, we identified officer after officer and realized this is happening simultaneous to the arrival of the Hungarian transports and the mass murder of 400,000 Hungarian Jews in a span of 3 months.
The last large Jewish community in Nazi-occupied Europe.
Exactly right.
And when you discovered these pictures of Josef Mengele, these are in and of themselves important.
Yes. These are, as far as we know, the only photographs of Mengele taken at the camp. Not only is he in uniform, he's surrounded by, in one photograph, the commandant and the ex-commandant. The current commandant, who his name was Richard Bayer, and he was Karl Hooker's superior officer. Hooker worked for him. Standing next to him is Rudolf Höss, who was the former commandant of the camp, brought back specifically to oversee the Hungarian arrivals. He was such a specialist in mass murder that they brought him back to help.
Resolve their
Jewish problem.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Our number, by the way, if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We're talking with Rebecca Erbelding, an archivist at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. And let's get John on the line. John's calling us from Dayton, Ohio.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was just wondering if, since we know that the German people are now very well integrated into modern society and are not a violent people any more than anyone else, do these kind of photographs show that any kind of society can be turned to such dark deeds through, you know, the right kind of charismatic leader or the right kind of rhetoric that causes them to throw aside their shared humanity even with another people?
I think they do, and I think that's a very perceptive question. There are photographs in here of Karl Hooker shaking hands with his dog, showing his dog how to sit. These are things that I do with my dog. There mm-hmm. are things that everyone does. And it really shows that... I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. It shows, again, the banality of evil, that they went home and did the sorts of things that we did. But their society had gotten to a place where they found it morally acceptable to kill massive amounts of people simply for the way they were born.
Well, and I think that maybe the most important thing, just my opinion again, is that it's not necessarily the evil of some highly archaic thing that you can always identify, but rather it's the fact that they lost their appreciation for their shared humanity, and they could look at these people who are clearly just like them and would have the same moments of sharing with their dogs or pets, but could somehow perceive that they didn't share the same kind of, you could call it soul or brotherhood, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word.
It's also, and it's a very good point, John, but it's as you were talking about earlier, Rebecca, it's the ability to compartmentalize. For example, those young women with the bowls of blueberries, did they know what was going on at that death camp?
Oh, absolutely they did. They were in charge of the teletypes that went from the camp to Berlin. And we know some of what those teletypes said. It included, this is the number of the transport that came in, these are the people who were on it, and these are the people who were selected to work. And these are the number of people who were not selected to work. This is what they did during the day. And so I don't think you could defend the fact that they did not know what was going on. Mm-hmm. They had to have.
And certainly these officers clearly knew the man shaking hands with his dog.
Oh, absolutely. There's pictures of him standing next to Otto Mall, who was the supervisor of the gas chambers.
Hmm. John, thanks very much for the call.
Very interesting. Again, none of this discussion, gives any sort of approval to what the events that occurred, but it is important to recognize that we're all human beings.
Mm-hmm. No, and one of the most important things that we want to reiterate is that you need to see this album within the context of the Holocaust and within the context of Auschwitz. If you just look at it by itself, it's a vacation album. But in the context of other photographs that we have and what we know is going on, it shows the evil, the absolute evil that human beings can get to.
And your website, in fact, they are contrasted with that other, the so-called Auschwitz album, which showed those Hungarian Jews around.
Yes, and there's actually a web feature in which you can flip through the album yourself. It's at the museum's website at www.
There's a link to it at npr.org.
Oh, okay, good.
At our website. So, John, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
All right. What happened to Karl Hooker, the man whose album this was?
Karl Hooker, actually, after the evacuation, he and Richard Bayer both went to Dora-Mittelbau, which was a concentration camp in Germany, and commanded that camp until the spring of 1945. After that camp was liberated, they escaped. Karl Hooker was caught into a British POW camp until 1946 and then resumed his daily life. He was a banker. Became a banker again and lived happily until 1963 when he was picked up as part of the Frankfurt Auschwitz trial. He was put on trial. They determined that they couldn't place him at the ramp. No one could say, yes, I saw him there. Everyone said he must have been there, but no one could put him there for sure. So he only got 7 years. He was out of prison in 1970 and died in 2000 at the age of 88.
And what did he do after he got out of prison?
He resumed banking.
We're talking with Rebecca Erbelding, an archivist at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, about a group of extraordinary pictures which have recently surfaced of a day's outing by the staff at Auschwitz. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Wayne. Wayne's with us from Lansing, Michigan.
Hi, are you... I just wanted to call. I went to the Holocaust Museum with a friend, and she's from Germany, and her grandfather was a Nazi. And she was just talking about how it was so odd to see him, you know, to see all this Nazi, you know, the horrors, and to realize that that was her grandfather that was that.
And what did she remember of him as a human being?
She just remembered him, you know, that sitting on his lap, and that, you know, this was her grandfather. You know, he was a loving man, and she was having a lot of trouble
reconciling the two.
Right, juxtaposing it between that he could be possible, that he could have done some of this horrible stuff, but yet she remembered him being loving and a, you know, jolly grandfather sort of thing.
A man who shook hands with his dog, perhaps.
Yeah, true.
Thanks very much for the call, Wayne.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. I'm looking at another picture here, and this is looks to be maybe the same outing, but an accordion player, and there's a group of, looks to be maybe 50 men in uniform. This looks like a sing-along.
Yes, it is a sing-along. We're not sure what they're singing. I wish we knew. But the front row of that album are some of the major high-ranking officers. You'll see Joseph Kramer, who is the head of Birkenau. You'll see Franz Hessler, who was the head of the women's camp in Birkenau. Two commandants, Hirss and Bayer. Karl Hooker is there, and Joseph Mengele.
And if these pictures had come out earlier, they do show some men in uniform on parade at various points. Could they have been helpful in some of the trials?
I think they might have been. Hirss and Kramer were both sentenced to death for their involvement in the war crimes, but I think it may have influenced Karl Hooker's trial in the 60s if it had come out earlier, mm-hmm. just because it shows him in such close proximity with so many of the high-ranking officers.
Did you talk with your anonymous source? Did he explain why it's so late that he provided these?
I think he was quite elderly. He happened to pass away over the summer, unfortunately, but I think he had it in his attic, as so many people do, and wasn't sure what to do with it. He was approaching the end of his life and wanted to make sure that it went to a good place. And that's another thing that we're hoping to get out with this album, that people realize that we're still collecting, we're still trying to rescue the evidence of the Holocaust, and this is an important piece of it, but we don't know what else is out there. And we're so eager to find out what people may have in their attics, in their garages, survivors, witnesses, liberators, all of whom may have things from their own families or may have brought things back from the war. And we're really hoping that we are able to rescue the evidence so that we can use it when the survivors and when the witnesses are no longer with us to teach the Holocaust.
Let's speak with Dave. Dave with us in Portland, Oregon.
Hi, I've got a similar story from some of the other callers with a little bit different twist. My mother came over when she was 12, right after the war. My grandfather had, he was German and was in both one and two, but my lesson, but I'm trying to get a sense of my own personal and family's responsibility, so we've been always interested in this topic. One of the major lessons I've taken from it is where it actually happened, in that it happened in Germany which was a highly civilized society in context. They had the Bauhaus movement, they had jazz, they had a very liberal society. And the lesson is that it happened there. So we've always got to be on guard for it, because if it can happen, it doesn't just happen in dictatorships and African nations. It happened there. It can happen here. We've always got to be on guard on that. And when you're looking at those pictures, you're seeing that in the heart of people lies this propensity for evil. So you've always got to be on guard. You can't say that it happened. If those people were different, they were somehow different from me. No, within the human nature is this propensity for this horrible evil, and you've always got to be on guard for it. Hmm.
Exactly.
Dave, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And one final question. This is from an email from Jamie. Is there a concern of normalizing these individuals?
There really is, and that's why we've tried to be so careful to put it in the context of the other photographic album and to make sure that people understand that this was happening at Auschwitz, make sure that people know what was going on at the camp at the time that these photographs were taken. As we've stated before, just flipping through it, it makes them seem normal. It makes them seem like your next door neighbor. And they were and they weren't. Because as we've spoken, they were human beings, but they were also human beings who were perpetrating the greatest crime of the 20th century.
Rebecca Erbelding, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Rebecca Erbelding, an archivist at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. Again, you can see examples of the photos online. Just go to npr.org/talk. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.